world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night here until 10 on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. News, talk, and entertainment radio that knows what the hell it's talking about. And truth is our bitch on his show. It's good to be with you here from our Hendry Radio Broadcasting Complex, the El Pacifico. Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard here with us. And the news that has been most frequently commented on, I would say, news out of the main of just everyday life is this situation in Nairobi. Nairobi, Kenya, where a gun battle inside a shopping center has left dozens of people dead. Gunmen attacked the Westgate Center, one of the city's most exclusive shopping malls. And we do have some audio from a BBC reporter who was at the scene outside the mall as the military was moving armored vehicles into that area. And you're going to hear this young woman doing some broadcasting. She's going to be doing some reporting, and then you'll hear the order to get down or to take cover from the military.
We have seen many people, casualties. We've been asked to lie down now. I've got to lie down. We don't know what's going on.
Where is it?
We're just hiding
in Nairobi.
You can't see me on camera now.
We've just had to lie down.
There was an order there as the military armored vehicle moved towards the area of the building. Now everyone is lying down. We don't know what is going on. We're just sweating.
Would you guys forget the peanuts and listen to what?
I can see some helicopters now coming closer to the building, flying over the building, lying down.
I like the Spanish peanuts.
From my position, I can see now people running around.
Hold on for just a second here. Started the show. You know that, don't you?
I know that.
Well, forget about whether he came in with Spanish peanuts or not.
They just like the Spanish peanuts because they're funny.
They're funny?
Yeah, I think they're funny, man, because when you go... Well,
yeah, they don't digest.
Oh, that's great, man. I got a story here out of Kenya that has to do with hostages, and it has to do with a lot of very serious stuff. Do you mind?
I'm sorry, I didn't know...
When it says
we have
on the air,
seen
we're
many
on the air.
People, casualties. We've been asked to lie down now. I've got to lie down. We don't know what's going on.
How come she's lying down?
Shut up.
We're just hiding behind. We can't see me on camera now, if it's still on. We've just had to lie down. There was an order there as the military armored vehicle moved towards the area of the building. Now everyone is lying down. We don't know what is going on. We're just sweating.
Well, if she says lying down one more time, I think
some
I'm going to
helicopters now coming closer to the building, flying over the building, just lying down. From my position, I can see now people running around, not sure what is going on.
Anna, are you safe to continue reporting there?
What is going on here?
Are you safe, Anne, to continue reporting there?
I beg your pardon?
Are you in a safe enough position to continue reporting?
Yes, I am hiding behind what seems to be like a barrier, and I'm lying down, which is the order that we have been given. I can continue reporting to you from this position.
And are you hearing anything? Are you hearing gunfire, or what is going on?
No, I can't hear anything other than the order to lie down. I can't hear anything. More shouting now from that general direction. I don't know if it is the military officers shouting, or every now and then when they need to clear the road for an ambulance to pass, we have heard people shouting to clear the road. I can't exactly tell what they're saying now. So it's a very
tense
situation.
We've been playing for you for a couple of minutes here, the reporting of Anne Soy. Anne is with the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. She's a foreign correspondent, obviously, and she is in the Kenyan capital of Nairobi reporting on the attack on this mall in Nairobi, and the gunmen who, by the way, are now waging some kind of a social media war with the authorities as to why this entire thing has taken place. Don Berman is, and Margaret, you wanted to...
I don't want to interrupt Don, but just what I was listening to, and I'm sorry that you felt it necessary to mention that Robert came in with a can of Spanish peanuts.
Okay, I understand. Let's just move past that.
Well, it makes me sound unprofessional.
Okay, but you were reaching for the Spanish peanuts instead of
Man, plus what I said about them not digesting.
What about them not digesting? I really resent that.
You're the one that goes on the bathroom.
That is the most vulgar...
All right, what is that? Do we have to talk about that?
You're gonna eat a Spanish peanut. I'm the guy who gotta go in.
You gotta wipe the inside of the bowl down.
All right, I'm gonna be back when all of you grow the hell up. How dare you?
He's gotta wipe the inside of the bowl down, huh?
No. You're the one that's laughing.
I'm not laughing, I'm disgusted.
If you're laughing, Henry...
Don't, I'm not laughing, I swear. Don Berman is with us. Don, how are you?
I'm doing well, Phil, thank you.
I apologize, Don. We've got a lot of things going on here.
What you have going on there is a crew of individuals, I think, that act a little bit more adult in this situation, and I think it is a very... a dire situation there in Nairobi. You have these gunmen. They've taken hostages. Dozens of people are dead. I'm listening to a young lady who is reporting or trying to report. I think it's a very tragic situation, but I don't want to comment directly on this situation because of the lives that have been lost. I do want to comment, though, on the professionalism of any broadcaster or any reporter in a situation where you're covering gunfire, where you're covering violence, where you're covering an active scene where there may be a firefight or there might be explosions or so on and so forth. I think this is where a reporter is tested. Some reporters are tested. I think, Phil, that I had my baptism of fire. I think all reporters have their baptism of fire, and you live with it for the rest of your life. You'll live with it. This young lady for the BBC, I'm not going to comment on her. I don't want to comment on anything going on there. I will say this. If you're going to be a reporter, then you've got to get out there and get that story, even if it means you lose your life. Now, you know the stories, I know the stories, I put myself in harm's way, and it's the least that I would expect of any colleague.
Well, again, so we probably shouldn't even have brought up this situation, because it's very fluid.
No, I don't want to bring, but I am saying this. When I listen to a fellow broadcaster, and I remember back when I was covering the Las Vegas, it was not Las Vegas, it was Reno, there was an extortion attempt on a Reno casino. And a man had somehow secreted a bomb inside of this casino in Reno, Nevada. And I was there. I was on scene. And in fact, I did do a news feature at that time for the local Reno television station called Don Berman On Scene. And I watched as that hotel blew up right in front of my eyes. And we were at a place where they had the press. Where they put us because they didn't want any, they said they didn't want any injuries, but I can assure you that I could very well have been injured because this was an explosion that could have sent debris right straight into our position. But it was then that I realized just how tenuous and how unsafe our profession is. So if you're a broadcaster and you cannot get yourself into that action, to get yourself right into that scene, even if it means that you may very well be gunned down and killed, then I say to you, with all due respect, get the hell out of my industry, get out of my profession, and let some people step in there that can do the job.
All right, those are some pretty challenging words there, Don. Your baptism of fire came in Reno when they blew up, the man blew up the building?
No, the authorities blew the building up because they couldn't find the bomb, and so they got the... permission of the building's owner, the casino owner, to go ahead and blow the building up.
Well, where were you guys were in the middle of this when it happened?
No, we had been moved down the street to a position where they said we were not at risk. But I'm here to tell you that was a big explosion, and had it been bigger, had I not, a lot of different things could have happened. I could have been killed.
But what I'm saying is, you were in a protected position.
Well, you can say it's a protected position, but what is protected when some maniac has planted a bomb in a building? I'm just telling you, I had my baptism of fire.
All right, Don Berman with us here from Channel 19 News, talking on the the news coverage that that field reporters do when they're in the middle of a very dangerous situation. Is it a gun battle? Is it a bomb that needs to be defused? Is it a war scene? Is it a combat situation? Are they in a theater of war? There's all kinds of... I think we all remember, or maybe some of us remember, my age, remember Arthur Kent as he stood on the rooftop of that building in Saudi Arabia reporting on the incoming Scuds from Iraq. Even as people were running for cover, there he was standing out in the open waving that gas mask trying to get the attention of the network news desk in New York so that he could go live. Even as Scuds were exploding behind him. So that kind of earned him the nickname of the Scud Stud. And people like that, Christiane Amanpour and others. So we're going to get back to talking to Don Berman about this. Our number, 855-500-7445. Don's been there and done that, and he says that this new generation of reporters, they just don't understand that, you know, you have to, you got to stick your face right out in the middle of that. You got to risk your life to get the story. Otherwise, get, as he said, get the hell out of his profession. World-famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445. We're online at philhenryshow.com. You can watch our live-streaming video cast of the show right now with a backstage pass. And, of course, 5,000 hours of audio. It's all there, baby. It's all there. It's all happening at the zoo. philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here to the Phil Henry Show. I apologize for that brief bit of briefness. We're just looking here to see what the situation is. The mall siege is, quote, over, but the death toll is unclear. The Kenyan president was on television saying that the these militants had been defeated as Kenya began 3 days of mourning on Wednesday for at least 67 people killed in the siege of a Nairobi mall. It was unclear how many more hostages may have died with the Somali Islamist attacks buried, attackers rather buried in the rubble. We got Don Berman on the line with us. We're not really talking too much about the specifics of that story because it's just not, it's not something that we're equipped to do or prepared to do, but we are talking about something that has to do with the reporting of these events, and that is the on-scene reporters. We just heard one from the BBC. You're not criticizing her, are you?
I don't want to criticize anyone actively working that particular story, Phil, but let's take, for instance, the Scud Stud that you were talking about, Arthur Kent, who, you repeated the story, and people thought that he was a very brave man. Well, had I been there, and I'm just saying what I would have done, and I think what other professionals would have done, I would have gotten off of that roof, and I would have gotten into a Jeep, and I would have gone as close as I could to where those impact craters were from those Scuds. And the reason I would have done that is that's where the story is. Now, the chances that those Scuds are going to hit in the same place twice are very, very low. You can go to the usual, lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place.
Can I just mention something?
All right, but I want to finish the point if I could.
Go ahead.
So I would get into a Jeep, find one of the Saudi Arabian assistants that they obviously have assigned to you and tell him, I want a Jeep and I want to go to exactly where that Scud just blew up. Because that's where the story is. That's where the casualties may be, God forbid, but that's where they may be. That's where the destruction is. That's where the Scud landed. It didn't land on the rooftop where Arthur Kent is standing waving his little mask.
Well, you're not putting down what the guy did, are you? I mean, a lot of people, a lot of professionals...
I'm not putting it down, but I'm not saying that he was any kind of a big hero, to use the colloquial pronunciation. There are heroes, and there are heroes. And I think when we say the word hero, we're talking about a guy that sort of pumped up a little bit. Maybe he even did his own press on that. I don't know.
All right, so he didn't do anything that heroic. I'm just saying the commentary from the network, you know.
Well, the network is going to say he was a hero because the network has an investment in him, and obviously they want to make Arthur Kent. I'm not putting down Arthur Kent. It was a fine job, but were, had I been there and had I been granted the permission that I was asking for, that was 22 years ago, and I was working for a television station in Fresno, California, but I said I would travel at my own expense to Saudi Arabia, and I said, I don't care how I've got to get there. I'll go by way of a merchant marine ship. I even offered to stow away. I mean, that's how bad I wanted to get over there. And then they said, no, we'll buy you a plane ticket. And I said, that's what I'm talking about. They wanted to buy me a first-class plane ticket. I said, that's not reporting. And I said, it's not going to happen.
Wait, you refused to go to
but listen to me for a minute, Phil, before you start, jumping to conclusions. I didn't go to Saudi Arabia to do the job over there that I could have done way better than Arthur Kent or any of those guys because they wanted to fly me first class. Do you understand?
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? Jesus. Boy, that almost hurts. What's wrong with it is that it is not the way a reporter that is about to get his head blown from his shoulders. That is not what you want to do. That's not the kind of toughening that you need when you're going into a story like that. So
you're telling me that you wanted to take a merchant marine ship?
I don't know. I said that I told the television station, I said I'd like to go by way of a naval vessel or some kind of a troop transport like that, or if you're going to fly me, I want to fly in a troop transport plane where there is no pressurized, there's a pressurized cabin, obviously, but, you're not necessarily being buffeted from the turbulence. There's a whole lot of throwing up that goes on in those planes. I said, that's what I want. That's what I need. I got to have that if I'm to be a reporter.
Talking to Don Berman here, folks, it's a very interesting. He's giving us his experience as a reporter, reporting on these highly volatile situations, reporting on scenes of violence, war zones. You were there when they blew up. This was a guy that blew up the. I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong again, Don.
No. I'm sorry, I told you though. But no, the authorities blew the casino up when they couldn't find the bomb, and that's when I asked them. As we all did, I said, "Well, I got to get out of here, and I've got to. It's on you to make sure we're safe." I was nervous, but I nonetheless, I was in a very dangerous situation, Phil. Okay, so
I understand that.
So I said to them, and that's when they put us a few blocks away at another hotel, and we watched as this explosion occurred. And I, excuse me for saying this, but I almost blanked, when I saw this thing go off, because I could well see shrapnel or debris from this thing blowing through the window that I was standing in front of, and the next thing I've got a shard of glass that's gone right straight through my skull or something. It was very horrible.
God, I'm glad that didn't happen. But you're basically talking here, Don, about these instances. Now, you were also... You were not in Saudi Arabia at the beginning of the Gulf War, but you wanted to go.
Yes, I asked the television station to allow me to go by way of some kind of a naval vessel, so I had the oil and the grease of the sea on me. When I got off that boat in the Middle East, I wanted to get off that boat wearing the khaki pants. I wanted to have my recorder slung over my shoulder. I wanted to have that pack of cigarettes. In other words, I'm a reporter. All right? I'm not a... I can't use the word. It starts with a P and it ends with a Y, and it rhymes with wussy.
I understand.
Yeah, that's not me. So when they said, no, we're going to fly you, I said, well, then you can forget it, because I'm not going. It's as simple as that.
But what you're saying is, had you been in Saudi Arabia when those Scuds landed... You would have gone right to where the Scud exploded.
That's why that guy, Arthur Kent, and the rest of these guys don't impress me at all. And that's why I said I'd go, let's take the Iraq War. These so-called embedded journalists, those are fine. They're good, and okay, good for you. You got a helmet, and you look like a soldier, and you're walking, and not for me. And I think the soldiers over there understand there are reporters, and then there are reporters. And I think the soldiers over there would have seen Don Berman, and they would have said, now this is a guy that, if I need to, I can give my weapon to him, and he can cover me, because I feel...
You're talking about a combatant...
I know that, but I just feel that I have that kind of respect.
All right. Don Berman is with us here from Channel 19 News. 855-500-7445 is the number here as we talk with Don about what it takes to be a reporter in a war zone. What it takes to be a reporter in a crazy place like that, man, where there is violence, where there are people dying, where other reporters have died. And I can tell you, a lot of you guys are not old enough. We've seen things on the news here in this country that have been horrific. I actually saw a journalist for ABC, Bill Stewart, get shot and killed on screen, on camera, in Central America during the Nicaraguan revolution. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445. Welcome to the Phil Henry Show. We're back here. We have Don Berman on the line with us from Channel 19 News, and we're talking with Don about the reporting of news stories, violent news stories, news stories where a reporter is thrown into the fray, where a reporter is having to, he's having to deal with not just reporting the story, but the environment that he's in is a violent environment. And Don, you were at the this explosion in Reno, Nevada. You were at you were not in Saudi Arabia, but you. You. It sounds to me like you're saying you knew what you would do.
Yeah, well, I did. I knew that I would go had I been there. To me, Arthur Kent, good reporter, but you've got to have the guts to go to where the explosion is. And you have to have the guts, like in the Iraq War, to go right where as we used to say in the newsroom, where are the heads rolling? Because they were literally rolling in that war. And that is a sad thing to say, but there were people getting their heads cut off. And I would say, you got to go wherever those heads are. And that would be where the heads are,
So, in other words, literally.
Yes, literally. Where is that violence taking place?
All right, our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. And you're on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Okay. I heard your guest speaking of an explosion in Reno at a casino. I've lived in the area for quite a long time, and one thing I believe is that reporters should have their facts straight and such. I know of no such explosion in Reno. I know in Lake Tahoe at Harvey's Casino in the 1980s there was an explosion.
Well, that was a man who placed a bomb there.
In Lake Tahoe?
Yes.
I heard earlier you're saying it was Reno.
I don't understand why you're making a big deal out of that.
Well, the man is saying you should know where you're in Reno or Lake Tahoe.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Okay.
And not only that.
So you got me.
May I speak?
The
bomb was located. It was determined to be so sophisticated at the time. It was booby-trapped and such. They knew where it was at. They sandbagged the bomb. They isolated the bomb.
Right.
They got all the people away from it and everything, and then they did detonate it, as your guest says. But if he was there, he should know the difference between Lake Tahoe. They're, 90 miles apart or so?
I'm saying the point is that I was there, and that bomb went off.
You don't know Lake Tahoe from Reno? You were there?
No, what I'm saying is, sir, as I said to Mr. Henry and I said to his audience, that bomb went off, and the shrapnel from that bomb could have killed me.
Were you in Reno or Lake Tahoe where the bomb went off?
The gentleman is saying that the story, and I'm looking at the story.
Validity, sir.
I'm looking at the story here.
Very big talk. No. I just question your validity.
I was in whatever you call it.
What was the name of the casino?
It was Harrah's.
Harrah's?
Yes, sir.
No, sir, it was Harvey's. Harvey's in Lake Tahoe.
The what?
Blown up. Not Harrah's.
You know, this is what I... all right, fine.
I was at Lake Tahoe. Were you there?
Were you where? I've covered these stories,
sir.
Yeah, I've covered the stories. You haven't. So have a nice time.
Obviously you did. You got it all mixed up,
have
sir.
Have a nice time,
I think
sir.
You better get your facts straight. You're a reporter.
Have a nice time delivering your ice cream tomorrow.
You take care. Get your facts straight
and
next time.
Make sure the music machine works on your ice cream truck.
What a smart ass.
Who is?
You!
I am. I'm the... I happen to be the guest on this program, and what I'm trying to say to you, Phil, if you'll let me just finish.
But no, but the comment about the make sure the music machine works on your ice cream truck, that man, because I looked the story up, it was in Lake Tahoe.
It was in Lake Tahoe. All right, it was in Lake Tahoe. Why on earth would that keep you and keep your listeners from understanding that I was there? I saw a building blow up. I don't know if it was called Harvey's, and I have to be honest with you when I tell you this right now, and I'm sure there are people listening right now who seriously question that man's grasp of facts. There is a Harrah's Casino. I think we've all heard of it. Harvey's?
Well, look, I don't know. There's all kinds of casinos. There's all kinds of businesses, both large and small, in the state of Nevada where gambling is legal. They're not all the large enterprises and concerns that we've heard of. They're not all the Harrah's and the whatever, the Caesar's Palaces. I don't know how many of these different casinos are in more than one city, you know, almost like a franchise. But the fact is, that man had the city right, because I just looked this up.
You're looking on Wikipedia, and you, of all people, should know.
Well, all right, I'll look on something other than Wikipedia, if that makes you happy, but it was in Lake Tahoe.
All right, it was in Lake Tahoe. I don't think that's as important as for you to know that I was there, and I was in direct proximity to an explosion. See, this is the part that gets me. I know
that you were in direct proximity to an explosion. I know that there was a violent explosion. I know that the authorities blew that bomb up, and I get all of that. I don't see how that's the same as being in a war zone.
Well, I'm sorry?
I said I don't see how that's the same as being in a war zone.
When
you're sitting behind a barricade that the police put you behind, and they've told you we're going to blow a building up, and you said to me that you requested a place to be that's safe.
I said to a cop that was standing there, who looked like he didn't have a lot to do, I said, well, why don't you tell me where I can go so I don't get blown to bits? And
no, so now you're putting it on this cop. I'm just telling you, it doesn't sound like a fluid and unpredictable a scene of chaos, violence, and war when there are cops telling you where to be safe as they blow a building up. That's a controlled demolition.
Well, you're using a lot of the big words, Phil, but you're not using the right words.
What does that mean?
Just what I said. You're using all the big words, but you're using the words, but are they the right words? You're saying controlled demolition. And, okay, good for you. You heard that on, I don't know, Lieutenant Kenda on Investigation Discovery or something.
No, I've heard it over the years as something that people say who are in the demolition business, controlled demolition.
Well, this was an explosion that could have killed me and anyone.
So your essential criticism, though, is that reporters today don't have the guts that you had.
That is exactly, if I can jump in, because I want to take Don's side on this. I'm really...
Thank you, Margaret.
Yes, I really think you're missing something, Phil. You're not a newsman. I am. I'm a newswoman. And Don's a newsman. We're in the news business. And when you are told to go to a scene, and there's gunfire, there are explosions, there are, God forbid, body parts, and you're told to go right into the middle of that and get an interview, yes, even with someone that may be dying. I did that once. I went right into the middle of what had been an explosion. It blew everything. I'm sorry.
It blew?
I'm a little bit nervous.
Why are you nervous? You're the one that got the panel job. I was up, well, I better not say.
Yeah, let's not get into how you didn't get the job. How you didn't get the job on the show, okay?
Listen to you. All right.
God, Mr. Henry, that's not very professional.
Get a load of you telling me what professional is.
Phil, can we just stick to the point? I walked into the middle of an explosion that I could have been in the middle of, and they told me, get in there and see what you can see.
Now, how long after the explosion?
I beg your pardon?
How long after the explosion?
I'm not answering his question. So I was there.
Well, that's a good question. How long after the explosion?
Yeah, I'd like to know, too.
And I jumped into this fray to defend you.
No, how long after the explosion did you go into the middle of the exploded area, or the blewed-up area, whatever you said?
I don't have to take this. Excuse me.
Margaret, you were in the middle of a story here.
I don't have to take it.
I suspect, Phil, that she was in the middle of that explosion, or that place that had exploded, about a week after it had exploded.
No, hold on. I'm getting... No, yes, it was several days. It wasn't a week.
All right, are you getting up and leaving? Yeah, there she goes.
Yes, I am.
She comes in, throws her hand grenade, and then she leaves.
Hold on, I resent... You're talking about an explosive. I resent...
Margaret, you can't keep walking in and out of here, okay?
No, that's okay. I was married to a broad.
A broad?
Just stay out of here.
Phil, I'm telling you that I'm not criticizing anybody's work, but I am telling you that I had the guts. I had the guts to watch that building get blown up, and I had the guts to want to go to Saudi Arabia, and I didn't want to go on an airplane, and I had the gut. I realize it probably now as I say it out in the open, it didn't take that much in the way of guts.
No, it didn't. No, you're talking about people...
Well, hold on for a minute. You're going to start calling me a P-U-S...
No, I'm not saying that either, but I'm saying that if you're telling me that today's reporters don't have the guts in a war zone or in a... I've seen all kinds of reporting that's being done now. With the Internet, there are all kinds of young... freelance journalists, videographers, they're out there, they're doing some crazy-ass stuff, man. I mean, those kids that I talked to a few years ago, they were going between the Israeli side in Lebanon and Hezbollah. They were literally on a motorcycle. These are Americans. These are two 19, 20, 21-year-old American videographers and journalists going between the Israeli military positions and Hezbollah, getting interviews with both sides, doing this on a motorcycle, not even a motorcycle, on... What was that, Bud?
Yeah, it looked like the deer's on a moped or something.
No, I'm not going to be on a moped.
On a moped? Don't make me laugh. You're telling me that Hezbollah is going to see a couple of pasty white boys pull up on a moped and they're going to give them much respect? I doubt it.
What do you mean, much respect? What are you talking about?
Well, have you ever heard of a Harley Davidson? Thank you.
You're not going to get a Harley Davidson. First of all, Harley Davidson is not exactly, a common sight in the war-torn streets of Lebanon or wherever the hell they were.
Well, I tell you, first of all, Lebanon's not that war-torn anymore. It's just the place where the Israelis are. Secondly, what do you mean, how are you going to get a Harley over there? You crate it up and you ship it.
So I'm going to crate up a Harley and take it over to Lebanon so I'm taken more seriously by Hezbollah?
Well, you're not going to pull up in a moped. And you're going to look like some sissy boy. Man, I tell you, they look at that. They might as well just blow you right off of that thing with an RPG. I would. If I were a terrorist with a sheet wrapped around my head or whatever they do, and I saw you, Henry, or me, I saw a replica of myself, only lighter skin, pull up, I would...
Okay, I got to put him on hold because he's losing it again. Don Berman with us from Channel 19 News.
May I come back in?
Yeah, come on in. Margaret, you can't get up and leave in the middle of a segment, though.
I apologize. I just don't... When you guys said that... I forget what you said, but it really pissed me off.
We'll be right back here on a world-famous Phil Henry show. Our number, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, and we're online at philhenryshow.com. More with Don Berman and the reporting on these... Crazy stories, baby. Crazy, baby. Crazy. Then we get into some politics, some Obamacare and shutting down the government. It'll be real good. It'll be fun. Phil Henry Show. Welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show. Don Berman with us here as we talk in the final few seconds about people and places and things in the news business. You got to be everywhere, man. And sometimes the places you got to be are very dangerous and they are frightening. And I was mentioning, because I met these kids from the States, two guys that had, I mean, excuse me for saying, but...
Balls of brass?
Well, I didn't want to come right out and say that.
That's very vulgar.
But they were made out of brass. These guys were amazing. And they were. They were, going between the Israeli military positions in southern Lebanon and Hezbollah's, and they were going back and forth interviewing, and they were meeting some heavy hitters on the Hezbollah side. I mean, guys that could just as soon, I don't know, snap their fingers and have these, And that whole line, Don, I'm sorry, where heads roll...
You may not like it, Phil, but that was exactly what I and a great many journalists like me We refused to go to Iraq because we wanted to go right where... And I said to Don Tenninger, who was my evening editor at the time, here at Channel 19, I said, Don, I want to go where the heads roll. And he was going, ha, ha, ha. And I said, no, I mean wherever they are... excuse me for saying this, wherever they're decapitating people. And he looked at me, and it was then that I knew that I had some respect in this business, because he said, Don, do you understand what you're saying? I said, yes, I do.
Well, did they send you?
No, they did not send me, and I was angry. I was very, very angry. When they said, no, we're not going to send you there, we want you to go. They wanted me to go to the Green Zone in Baghdad, and I said, forget it. I'm not going to the Green Zone in Baghdad, where every PU, well, you know the word, that's where every sissy, every gutless wonder, every guy that's got a big, wide, yellow stripe painted down the middle of his back, that's where all of those guys go, to the Green Zone. And you can sit in the Green Zone, and you can thumb it, and you can play mumbly peg, and you can twirl, you know...
Okay, I think, that, you know, that's really disrespectful to your fellow correspondents, isn't it?
What do you mean, my fellow correspondents? These guys are sitting in the Green Zone, and they're eating Milk Duds, and they're drinking Cokes, and they're playing foosball, and they go outside, and they get a tan, and you ought to see it. I mean, it was back in the day, when the U.S. forces were there in the Green Zone, it was like Hurricane Harbor. It was unbelievable.
We're talking about a war zone now.
Yes, I know, a war zone, but in the Green Zone, you'd have sworn you were in downtown Disney. As God is my witness, they had every kind of convenience. I talked to a guy by the name of Bill Stan who wanted to bring in, get this, Phil, a House of Blues.
Get out of here, House of Blues!
I swear to God.
Well, Don, this is Margaret, and you can swear all you want. The facts are these. You didn't go... And you didn't go because you say they didn't send you where the heads roll.
I said, do you want to know what I said to John Jeffrey?
I think you didn't have the courage.
So you finally got it said, huh?
Well, now...
No, hold on, Phil. You finally got it said, huh?
That's right. I don't think you had the guts. I think you were afraid.
You know something, Margaret? You leave your...
But what's wrong with you?
I can't believe it, I started to cry.
Well, Dawn, she's calling you gutless, that you the things that you've done haven't been all that dangerous, is what she's saying.
You know, Margaret, if you want to know how gutless I am, you leave the back door to your house unlocked tonight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but you hesitated, because I can hear the wheels turning. How do I get Frank out of the bedroom? How do I get Frank...
I hung up on him.
Thank you very much. And Don, if you're listening, and I know you are, you know something? Words fail me.
That was a pretty vile and vulgar thing to say, Don. If you want to know how many guts I've got, just leave your back door unlocked tonight.
Yeah, you guys are laughing, though.
Why are you laughing, Phil?
I'm sorry.
No, I don't think you are sorry. I think you think it's funny that Don's going to creepy crawl. I don't have to sit still for this.
Sorry.
But yeah, you're laughing all everything like that.
I know I'm laughing.
Don Berman wanted to creepy crawl me.
Yes, he did. Don Berman was going to go creepy crawl Margaret, man.
Don Berman going to go creepy... God, you sound all jacked up and everything.
Yeah, but you sound like you got a cocaine problem.
Oh, will you guys shut up? Okay, if I pointed out every kind of neurological malady you guys sound like you have, I'd be here all day and all night. It would never end. I'd need a physician's desk reference.
What? What'd you say?
A physician's desk reference. All right. Our hats are off to every journalist, wherever he, she, it is. You all do yeoman's work. Whatever a yeoman is, I have no idea. It sounds like something nautical, but I say it because I've heard other people say it.
A yeoman, Phil, is a man who is the salt of the earth. He's someone that can be relied upon. A yeoman...
That guy say yeoman.
Oh, stop, will you?
See, this is why I don't...
Just knock it off.
A yeoman is a kinsman. He's Aryan.
Get out of here, will you?
That's what I thought, anyway.
All right, so our hats are off to all of those fine people. Anyway, It is the Phil Henry Show. Thank you, Don Berman. It was going well. It was going very well until that whole thing about how you're going to creepy crawl Margaret.
Don Berman on the line if you want to talk.
What?
Don, he's on the line if you want to talk.
But let me say something. If you have something to say to me, say it like you speak English. Don't go ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, I always tell him that, man. He never does.
No, you don't.
Yeah, he does. I've heard him say it. Don't go ding, 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 ding. There's people listening. I got a show to do. What do you want? What? Don's on the line?
Yeah.
What's up, Don?
I didn't creepy crawl anyone. I absolutely resent that. If you want me to be graphic, Barbara, I will. I wasn't going to creepy... Are you talking about the Manson family?
Yes, the way the Mansons creepy crawled people.
No, I'm not creepy crawling you. I got way better things to do than to creepy crawl your ass.
I hope Don Berman dies painfully, and I hope you long remember these days that we shared together here.
I will. I'm not going to creepy crawl your ass. All right, we're coming back here, sports fans. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Lots of other news. We've got some political news to get to that we have not gotten to, and I want to get to it because, it's got to be gotted to. We have a government that's going to get shut down. We have a president that everybody thinks is the worst thing since James Buchanan. We got a bunch of brain surgeons that think they know how to do it better, which they probably don't. And we'll be back with all of it here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Hey, welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show. CG and I get to talking behind the scenes, and we were discussing the politics of like Washington D.C. I don't know. But there is right now kind of a gleeful thing happening. According to this headline, Democrats see GOP shutdown threat as opening for 2014 election gains. Democrats are working hard to exploit massive unrest in the Republican Party over the looming government shutdown, which many see as one of their best chances of holding the Senate or even the House in next year's midterm elections. What, Margaret?
Well, I've got to laugh. They're always talking about massive unrest with the Republicans, and the Republicans can't get it together. Of course they can't get it together. This is a party that continually tries to take a woman like... And believe me, Phil, I really think the way forward is for those of us on the liberal side to reach out and to try and understand the conservative... our co-patriot, our fellow citizen who is a conservative. And to that end, a great many of us try to have the dialogue and say to them, why do you insist on this destructive woman like Palin? Her name never goes away. It's always there. And the reason why I think it's always there is because I think the conservatives really want to make Sarah Palin work somehow. They want to wedge her in. They want to...
Make a square peg fit on the hole.
Yes, that's good, Bud. Make a square peg fit in a round hole.
In a round hole.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point. And now I've lost my place.
Well, I mean, he had an opinion.
Yeah, but every time he comes in with that, I dig it. I'm sorry, Bud. I appreciate you, and I think you're a wonderful young man. But when you come lurching in... And that's the only way I can put it. You lurch into the room almost Frankenstein-esque with the, I think.
Well, they said I could do it.
He just gave a little opinion there, Margaret.
I know, but he lurched with it and...
What do you mean he lurched?
You talk about him lurching in?
You know what I mean by that.
No, I don't.
I'm talking, I'm saying, Phil, this and that, and then I hear, B-d-d-d-d-d. It's a lurch. He bellowed in. You see, never mind. I mean, the point that I'm making here...
Well, I didn't lurch in.
Yes, you did lurch in.
Well, you forget about whether he lurched in or not. Good Lord.
Phil, you know I don't like being addressed that way.
I apologize, Margaret. Forget it. He had this opinion. He said, you even liked the opinion he had.
It was fine. It's not anything I'm writing. I'm not getting out my notebook and saying, Dear Frank... What are you laughing at now?
Nothing, nothing, nothing.
Well, you're laughing at something. Would you get David Hall, please?
Oh, come on, Margaret.
Would you get David Hall, please?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, now it's yes, ma'am. First you're lurching in, and now it's yes, ma'am.
Why get David?
Please get David Hall.
Yeah. So, in other words, I got to listen to David because of why.
Get David Hall, please.
Margaret, you can talk to me, can't you? Can't you talk to me?
Is David Hall there?
David, yeah. Yeah, Margaret. Yeah, well, Phil, he's saying she's being retarded.
I am not.
Hold on for a minute. Yeah. I got Daphne and I are out. She wants to see the Christmas lights.
The Christmas lights? It's September.
I told her that.
What country is she from?
Well, that's very insulting, Phil. She's an American.
Then why does she want to go see the Christmas lights?
You know, let me finish. There are Christmas lights that are kept up by some of the houses year-round. I don't know why they do it, but they do. So she wants me to look for them.
I've never seen a house keep up Christmas... I know that they keep lights up.
Yeah, there you go, baby. And if they keep them up, maybe they light them. So that's what she's got me doing tonight.
In between stopping off at Krispy Kreme?
Forget it.
Where is David Hall?
He hung up.
Get him back on the phone.
Look, he doesn't want to talk to me any more than I want to talk to him, okay?
Get David Hall, please.
What are you going to ask him about, okay? Do you mind me asking you that? Great. I'm sorry that I laughed at you.
Phil, the Krispy Kreme line was way out of line. Way out of line.
You're out driving around, I assume that that's what...
Yeah, she's going to want to go there. Do you have to point it out to the entire audience? I got a girlfriend. I love her very much. But I got a problem. I got a problem. And the problem is, she won't do anything. She won't make one move. And I mean, she won't make any move intimately or otherwise unless she's got a box of those sitting in front of her. Now, you can call it what you want.
You know, you're going to be stuck with a 400-pound woman here pretty soon.
No. I don't think so.
Why not?
Because I won't let it happen.
You're letting it happen? You got her going out and getting Krispy Kreme.
She's not going out. I am. And when she says to me, as she often does, I shouldn't do that. Ow, don't come on, honey. I'm just kidding around. When she says to me, can we go get some? I'm the guy that controls whether we stop or not. Like right now, you want me to stop for Krispy Kreme, don't you?
I don't care.
What?
I don't care.
Well, she says she doesn't care, but I know she does.
Okay, so good luck finding Christmas lights that are lit, man, in September. And good luck with that whole Krispy Kreme. What can I do for you?
I'm calling up because I heard Margaret trying to make a point about Bud lurching in, and you were laughing at her, and I don't think that that is the way that we are going to be conducting ourselves. I realize we're doing this on the air, and I realize that you don't like me doing this with you on the air, but you also gave me the green light to call up and correct course, as you called it, correct the course of the show when need be.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was going to be a you know,
No, you don't get the joke, but I didn't know it was going to be a, and you got the guts to talk about Daphne, and you're making fun of the way she talks?
No, you made fun of the way she talks.
Yeah, but you laughed at it.
No, whatever, man. You're the guy that's talking about her sitting there going,
how dare you? So, in other words, you just mocked what she sounds like when her throat is...
constricted?
Goodbye.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. My ears are blown out by that. You got your juvenile kicks, okay? You got your little juvenile kicks. Now, can we get back to the point here? When he comes lurching in with, I don't know whether to crap or fall in it.
I tell you what, I'm simply going to say the following thing. You were making some very good points on the political, shall we say, the political tug of war or wrestling match that's happening in this country, and we just got sidetracked because you didn't like him lurching in with square peg and round hole.
All right, that's a good point.
Yeah, see what I'm saying? I mean, you just let it go, and we can continue hearing the points that you're making.
All right, well, the point that I am making...
Come on, hurry up.
You dirt...
Hey, watch. But don't do that.
The point that I'm making is the following point. I think as liberals we need to reach out to the conservatives and say we understand the pain that you're in. We understand that you want fiscal spending, and you have all of those things that you need. But we're asking a concession from you. We're asking you, and I'm going to put it the way my son Jason J. Delmonico put it. He put it very beautifully. He said, Mom, why do they weird out? And so I put this the way our kids would put it. Don't weird out on us. Be as approachable as you can be. The anger and the strange, odd behaviors, these things have got to go.
Well, who are you talking about? You're talking about Rick Santorum.
Yes, I'm talking about Rick Santorum. He is a real oddball, and I don't even think the conservative movement likes him. There's a guy that's running for lieutenant governor in Virginia. This guy by the name of Eddie something or other, and who's named Eddie anymore other than guys that are racetrack touts?
Race crap?
I didn't say race crap. I said racetrack touts. And I don't know what. People that get Broderick Crawford drinks in Born Yesterday, you know.
That was Benny, but go ahead. Look, why is everything such a big depressing thing when I jump in with a little comment that kind of, you know...
Kind of what?
Kind of just stops you in your tracks. Just so you want the conservatives not to weird out. That means get rid of Santorum.
That means get rid of guys like Santorum and that flake case they're running for lieutenant governor in Virginia. That's a guy that believes that if you play with it, if you'll pardon the expression, Phil, I'm sorry, but this is, he thinks that if you, as you put it, if you thumb it, you're allowing the devil into your hand. See, this is what I'm talking about.
You put me on that. I gotta really believe that.
I think Margaret's right, yeah.
You better believe I'm right.
They got this guy, the religious, there's all elements of religious people in this country, and the religious right, the religious left, whatever you want to call it, they're all, the extreme religious element in the political dialogue is always destructive. It never helps. Never, ever, ever helps. It's destructive, and fortunately, the American people, what's with you?
You want to hurry it up?
Hey, bud, knock it off with the hurry it up.
He did that to me, and you wouldn't let me...
Hey! Watch it. I'll slug him. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have Jack Armstrong coming in, who is our resident liberal, if you will. Jack is going to be talking with us about what we've been talking about here in this last quarter hour, once we got past all the Krispy Kreme donut dialogue, is just exactly how this the other kind of dialogue, the political dialogue in this country, can become more civilized. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 855-500-7445. I know.
You really got to pull it together.
I know. Anyway, welcome back. Phil Hendry Show here. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. What am I looking at on TV, bud?
That's the cruise cam.
That ain't the cruise cam. That's some imam from Iran. Where is that, man? Is that the United Nations?
Well, I thought that was the cruise cam, that nut from the Tea Party.
Does that guy look like a Tea Party guy?
I don't know what they're doing, Phil.
A lot of Tea Party will dress up in a nutty way.
Does that look like a Tea Party guy to you? That's a guy from Iran with the turban and everything.
You don't know, Mr. Sonny. If you ever been, you go to a Tea Party rally, they are all kind of fright wigs, every kind of costume.
The Tea Party people are known for that. I understand that.
When's the last time the Tea Party people were invited to address the UN dressed as an Iranian Ayatollah?
I don't know. I don't...
Oh, come on. That looks like it's at the United Nations. I see the president giving it is the United Nations, and he's giving a speech here, and I think it may have to do... I'm going to tell you something. I think Obama... Well, I better not keep my mouth shut, you know.
Why don't you just say what you want to say?
I don't want to say it. But I, as far as I'm concerned, the president is right on, man. I mean, you know, he let the Russians run around and do all that stuff. Let the Russians run around and make peace and make nice and break bread with the Syrians. That's good. That's a good job for them. You go over there and you say, oh, hi, are you the Russians? Yes. Well, guess what? We've got a bunch of bombs and missiles that we've got earmarked for Syria. Now, if there's anything you want to do about that, besides talk tough, because we know you guys couldn't rub two nickels together to make the buffaloes mate. What do you think about that, Putin? And so Putin runs off and gets the you know, he's talking to all these Syrians.
Well, I think that that's the case, but...
Well, we're going to get on Jackson Armstrong, and we have Vernon Dozier as well, representing both sides of this debate here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. The number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. And I realize that this has been my point of view for a long time, and I realize that some people, you know, when you make too much sense, the first thing people will say is, don't you have anything new to say? No, that's pretty much the way I see it, man. Jack Armstrong with us here from Minneapolis, and Vernon Dozier is in Glendale, California. Jack, I'm going to start with you. What did I just say about the president? And let's talk about the budget, first of all, and this filibuster by Cruz. What do you think?
There's no question that Ted Cruz is a real kook. I think pretty much people understand that his histrionics are not very meaningful in the overall scheme of things. Right now, the Democrats are in the driver's seat because the Republicans are eating themselves. They're in the middle of a civil war or something. There's nothing that that anybody can do about it. And I think that so the Democrats are in the driver's seat, and the Republicans, they're not in no driver's seat. See. So, to me, all they have to do is wait, and eventually the president's going to, they're going to move forward and get funding for the different, get the government rolling again. And as far as Syria goes, you know, sure they want to have diplomacy. That's very important. And you want to have diplomacy on the Iran situation, too. That's very important, too. But... I don't see anything wrong with what you just said, Phil, which is that the Russians can go down and do all the heavy lifting there with Syria, and America can sit back, you know, polish the missiles and aim them and look through the site, make sure that they got a couple of nice, sweet buildings, you know, keyed in.
You know, I don't like, Jack, I'm a liberal like you, but the idea of polishing the missiles and aiming them...
Well, I mean, that's what we should do. I agree with what Phil said. Let the Russians go down there and break bread with the Syrians and try to get them to see sense. That's not what we're going to do. What we're doing is we're polishing the missiles, looking through the site. Oh, there's a nice mosque. I think we can, you know, things like that.
Well, I don't think it's quite that cavalier. Vernon Dozier joining us from Glendale, California. Taking a decidedly anti-administration view. Vernon, how are you?
I'm doing good, Phil. And hi, Jack. How are you doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. How you been?
I'm doing great. I got a million things I want to say. I don't know where you want me to start.
Well, let's just start with the... Let's start with the filibuster and the Tea Party filibuster and the government shutdown.
All right, let's start with that. You know, just to recap some of the things that I've heard here, I've heard a little bit of, and I know that everybody is trying to, as Margaret said, reach out. And, all right, I would love a little bit of that. But when you turn right around and you say Ted Cruz looks like he come out of a, you know, a mental hospital, and I believe that's what I heard.
What I heard was there was a guy dressed as the Ayatollah.
There's a guy dressed as the Ayatollah. Well, you know.
No, but I said, who is that guy? And my crew here thought it was a Tea Party guy.
I didn't know who it was. Vernon, I'm not trying to start anything. I didn't know who it was.
Yeah, but I heard what Phil said. How likely is it that a Tea Party guy is addressing the United Nations dressed in that getup? And that was a very authentic getup. I know a lot of people in the Tea Party, and I've seen them get into their costumes and go out into the fields and into the parks, and they roam in these areas, and or they get together, obviously. I'm not saying they're roaming around in between parked cars. And that would be frightening, and I think you have to give that to the Tea Party that they're not doing that. You know, Phil? Phil?
What?
What I just said.
Yeah, I'll give to the Tea Party what?
They're not wandering between...
He's saying that the Tea Party is... They're not wandering between parked cars.
They're not wandering between parked cars.
Never mind, Phil. It's all right. It's not a big thing. But what I'm saying is, when you talked about this guy Cruz doing a filibuster from the Tea Party, I said, well, that's fine. That is his right as a representative, and certainly that's the political gamesmanship. But I think to attribute to that man the mental capacity of some near imbecile chained to a wall in a London madhouse, as one might imagine, you know, a half-wit who's let out of his cage once a week to play a flute on a excuse me, I'm just saying.
No, I don't think anybody's saying that.
Well, I think I heard that because, again, I'll go back to what I heard.
Well, why are you fixating on that? We're trying to move past that.
Of course you're trying to move past it, but I'd like to move past it too, but when you say that, is that a Tea Party guy and he's dressed up in that getup, that's very inflammatory.
What I was asking, and let me say this, Vernon, I saw a gentleman addressing the United Nations. I said, who is he? He was addressing the United Nations on a split screen as I was watching it. President Obama was on one side. This man, who is an obvious religious cleric, and he looked to be a cleric from Iran. He was wearing the same clerical robes and garb and headpiece that the Muslim imams in Iran wear. That's why I thought, well, he must be the Ayatollah, the whoever that guy is these days, you know.
Well, why didn't you say that instead of, you know?
Well, I thought I did.
No, you didn't. You said, well, who is that? And that's when Bud Dickman and Margaret Dickman and Bud Gray.
My name is Margaret Gray.
I'm sorry, Margaret Gray. And Bud Dickman said, you know, that's a Tea Party guy. See, that's the kind of slander.
All right, well, you know, if we're going to get petty...
how is that petty?
I think it is petty. I think you're just leaning too much on the fact that they said that guy from Iran looked like a Tea Party guy.
I think it's accusing the conservatives of a kind of... almost comparing us to traitors.
No.
No, it's not at all. It's simply saying that you've got people in your movement that really need help. Don't you agree with that?
You know.
All right, hold on for a minute. We have to take a break. We're going to be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and talk a little bit more here as we discuss what's going on in the confines of the District of Columbia in terms of Republican versus Democrat, conservative versus liberal, government shutdown, Obamacare, Syria, Iran, your mama. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're here every night on the West Coast from 7 to 10, on the East Coast 10 to 1. Very happy to be with you. We welcome great new affiliates to our affiliate list. I'm not trying to sidestep who they are. I want to get very prepared here, man. You know, on our next break, I want to find out. I want to lead the hour with some of our new affiliates.
I think you should, and I think you should do that every single show, every single hour with new affiliates. A new affiliate listing.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. All right, so we'll do that. So we do have some people joining the Phil Henry Show Network, and we'll tell you who they are. Just great stations, as we've always said, our stations, our sponsors, our listeners are there's radio and then there's the Phil Hendry Show, and we've always felt that way.
I like that. Do you?
Yeah, we're using it. I'm going to be using it. There's radio, there's Phil Hendry, and then there's radio. I don't know which way it should go. There's Phil Hendry, and then there's radio.
No, I forgot. There's radio, and then there's Phil. Yeah, there's radio, and then there's Phil Hendry.
Yeah, there's radio, and then there's Phil Hendry, and then there's, you know.
No, I don't know. What do you mean, you know?
Well, there's radio, then there's you, and there's, who's the what's the man? Beck, right?
Beck?
You mean Glenn Beck?
No. Who's the one? Beck. He just has one name.
You mean the guitar player?
Yes. What's that got to do with me? I'm saying there's radio, then there's Phil Hendry, then there's Beck.
Oh, okay, and then there's, you know, the guy that plays fiddle on a street corner there in New York at 5 o'clock every afternoon and does your portrait, too, and then there...
What does that mean?
Well, what does it mean to say that Beck... Hey, folks, there's radio, then there's Phil Hendry, and then there's ballet.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man.
You know, everything is funny to you, and it hurts. When you go, it hurts. It doesn't hurt my heart so much as it hurts... Excuse me for saying this, but I just had... I had hemorrhoid surgery. You know that.
Okay, folks, we're now going to hear about Margaret's hemorrhoids.
No, we are not. I'm simply saying that it hurts me there.
Yeah, well, maybe that's on account of...
You filthy mind...
Hey, hey!
What? No, I'll...
Watch it!
Don't tell me to watch it when he's making references like that.
Margaret, you brought it up. It hurts. It hurts, Phil. Not in my heart, where I just had hemorrhoid surgery.
Well, that's where it hurts.
Yeah, well, maybe...
What? Shut up, bud, because then I won't hold her back next time.
He doesn't hold me back, and you are nothing but something in an ashtray. Now, that's a promise from me to you.
All right, our number is 855-500-7445. I'm going to tell you something. If I hear any more threats of violence and death on this show, I'm going to have some people arrested. What do you think of that?
Oh, get a load of you.
That's right, terrorist threats. On the phone with me is Jack Armstrong and Vernon Dozier as we continue to talk here about the proposed, you know, all kinds of things. The government shut down Ted Cruz. He is saying, quote, he will talk until I am no longer able to stand. That was the latest thing, Jack Armstrong.
Well, he says he's going to talk until he's no longer able to stand. Does that mean he's going to talk until he can't stand it, or is he going to... He's going to talk until he's not able to stand, but he's going to talk until I can't stand it. And I think...
Well, you had to really run a long way for that one, didn't you?
What's that?
I said you had to run a long way for that one.
Vernon Dozier is with us. Hold on, Vernon. Let me just hear what Jack has to say here.
No, you're right about that, Vernon. I did run a long way for that one, but... sometimes you have to run a long way to catch the deep drive. You know, if Willie Mays did that, a lot of different guys done that, you know.
We're not talking about... It's not the same. You ran a long way for a pop fly, is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, whatever. Republican Ted Cruz of Texas took to the Senate floor on Tuesday to discuss the shutdown debate in remarks that headed deep into the night. So this guy wants to go deep into the night. And where I am, I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota right now, Phil, so, and the time where you are 8, so it's 10:38 here, so it's 11 o'clock, 11:30 in Washington, D.C., and this guy is trying to talk to prevent any funding for Obamacare. This is a guy that is an ideologue to a fault. Forget about whether or not in the long run Obamacare is going to be better for the American consumer. There's been a war of BS on this thing, and the American people have had their heads held in a trough of waste, of animal waste, and they're not allowed to stick their head up and breathe the fresh, clean air of truth. And the guy that's holding their head down right now is this guy, Ted Cruz.
Well, you know, that's all fine, Jack, and those are very, very beautiful words, and it's very floral. But I don't think it stands a test. I think that the Obamacare package is far from saving the American consumer money. I have seen studies that says it's going to cost the American consumer money.
Yeah, but what about the holding people's heads down in animal waste?
You know, I did not interrupt you, sir, and I'd appreciate it if you not interrupt me. Okay.
I think that's a fair point, Jack.
Okay.
You know, I didn't interrupt you, so I'd appreciate if you not interrupt me.
All right, okay.
You know, I'm letting you say what you want to say.
I know, okay, go ahead, God.
All right, I mean, don't be... anyway, I still, Mr. Henry, I want to know what country this guy is from.
I come from America, okay? You know where that is, don't you?
Yeah, I know where it is, because I was born there. Now, where were you born?
That's irrelevant to what we're talking about, you know? We talk about the Obamacare and whether or not, and, you know, I think this is so indicative, Mr. Andrew, that with these conservatives, you beat them on a question of the numbers and the math. Now they want to attack you on the basis of what country you come from. To me, this stinks to high heaven. It stinks. And to just, again, use the metaphor.
I know, we're putting your heads into a big, big bucket of animal waste. I think that's a metaphor that you like.
Well, you trying to tell me I enjoy that? No, I don't.
You guys haven't talked one second about Obamacare.
Well, are you talking to us?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm talking to you. You've been going back and forth about sticking somebody's head in a bucket of animal waste. I'm telling you, I don't know whether to laugh or to cry when I hear some of these debates. What are you guys saying about Obamacare? You start, Vernon.
I'm saying what I have said all along, what conservatives have said all along, and what Ted Cruz is very bravely saying tonight. And that is that Obamacare will put this country into a trough of debt. It's not a bucket of animal waste, Mr. Armstrong. This is simply a trough of debt. It's a bucket of debt that we will be underneath for a long, long time. And why is that? Because of this socialized view. Can I finish, Mr. Andrew?
Go ahead. Please don't do that, Jack.
Because of a socialized view. What is it with you, man? What's up with you?
I can't take it when you talk about a socialized. You guys...
Can I finish?
You asked me a question, man.
You did ask him the question.
All right. So I'm done asking you a question. The Obamacare is, in my way of thinking and in my view, socialization... for socialism.
No.
Would you ask him to stop doing that?
Come on, Jack, cut it out. You're doing that on purpose.
Well, I mean, what am I supposed to do? I'm listening to this guy. This guy is like he is a dumb fungus. You know, I'm trying to scrub it off and I...
Oh, I'm a dumb fungus. Is that what I heard you say?
Yes, sir, because... every time you open your mouth, now I gotta get some more. It's like I gotta keep a can of no-dumb to spray my crotch. I don't know how else to say it.
You know a lot of different ways of saying it. You're saying it in an inflammatory way to make me look like some guy that is the harbinger of, well, what you just said, like crotch rot. That is, I can't believe... This conversation, Phil.
No, neither can I, but I don't blame Jack alone. I blame you for your petty interruptions for you. And Jack, you with the, you guys are talking about something that the American people are very, very seriously interested in, and that is whether or not our government is going to keep going. Are we funding it? Just exactly is this an ideological battle with any roots in any real concern for the American people, or is this just a peeing match based upon ego, because that's what I think it is. I think that what has happened to this country is there is a sort of a hierarchy of conservatives and liberals, and they just pee on each other all day long, and the rest of us got to sit here and wait and see when they declare a winner.
Well, I think that is absolutely wrong when it comes to our side. I mean, you know, if you talk about peeing on each other, what Ted Cruz is doing...
Yeah, that's what Ted Cruz is doing. He's taking one long pee.
No, he's not. He is trying to wake up the liberals before it's too late. All across the country, he said, Americans are suffering because of Obamacare. Obamacare isn't working.
Yeah, according to Ted Cruz, because you think you're going to find a guy that is a Tea Party guy who's going to admit that?
Do you think you're going to find a guy with God? You know, it's like talking to the guy that sells those Aztec calendars at the border. I can't...
All right, okay, all right. Hold on for a minute, because the conversation once again, this debate once again, you know, these guys, they get sidetracked by every little... anything.
Well, I think Ted is such a... He's a petty little man making fun of Jack's accent.
I don't think Jack should have to say where he comes from. By the same token, if it would just shut this guy up, just tell us.
Doesn't want to say.
Where's he from, man?
He doesn't want to say.
Is it Europe?
He won't say.
All right, we're going to come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with more of this marvelous conversation. It is Jack Armstrong along with Vernon Dozier as they discuss what's happening right now in Washington, D.C., and that is the... Essentially, the filibuster here of Ted Cruz. We were starting off briefly there with a discussion of Syria and Iran, and we will get back to that as well. As we talk a little bit of politics here, in fact, I don't think we've talked much politics at all. It's been about having your head in a bucket of waste.
Well, I think that is a good analogy.
Yeah, it's great.
Don't blow me off like that.
You said blow.
So I said blow, so what?
We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number 855-500-7445. The world-famous Phil Enright Show and philenrightshow.com. All right, welcome back here to the Phil Enright Show and philenrightshow.com. By the way, my good friend Barry Louise, you know, Margaret.
Well, she's working back there for Terry McAuliffe.
Yeah, she's in the D.C. area working on behalf of Terry McAuliffe. They had had a debate. Barry's a super liberal, just like CJ's a super conservative. But both of these girls, CJ and Barry, both are mountain girls.
All right.
That's right. To quote that guy in the movie Mate Want, man, you're about the prettiest little piece of mountain trash I ever did see.
That's so insulting.
I'm kidding. Come on. When I first met her, she said, I come from the mountains, so I knew exactly what I was dealing with. No,
saying just on account of she comes from the mountains doesn't mean she's a liberal.
No, it doesn't mean anything. It means she comes from the mountains. Although CJ's from the mountains of Arkansas and Barry's from the mountains of West Virginia.
Well, yeah. See, Arkansas is going to be more conservative because of the distance from Arkansas to Washington. It's very remote. And the further you go from the seat of power, the more the people are going to just be doing whatever they feel like doing. And Arkansas is one of those very remote outposts in our union where we don't really know what happens there. They have sent people in.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Arkansas.
Yeah?
Well, what are you talking about?
What do you mean a remote outpost where they're sending people in?
Phil, they've sent people into Arkansas and they haven't come out. Go ahead and laugh at that, funny boy.
Is she too serious?
What? Yeah, Margaret, why don't you get serious, okay?
Boy, you know something? If you weren't the host of this show, I'd go ahead and just put a knee right in there. You don't know about that.
You know that Clinton's from Arkansas? You know that Arkansas is a state in the Union? Arkansas has cities, freeways. It's got one of the biggest airports in the country. Did you know that? Did you know that Arkansas is one of the busiest airports in the country?
And people have gone in there and not come out.
Yeah, and they've gone... What's that? They have shoes. Also, CJ says they have Jews, too. So...
Well, that...
They do. They have every kind of convenience. I'm joking, my Jewish listeners. So
you talk about Jews in Mississippi.
Yeah, there's Jewish people. Of course, there's Jewish people in Mississippi, but there's a very significant Jewish population in the Delta, in the Mississippi Delta. That's true, and they're all super, super Mississippi people with the overalls, and they have the yarmulke.
Oh, would you get serious?
I'm telling you the truth. I saw this on your favorite channel, PBS.
You saw some Jewish people in overalls and yarmulkes.
Exactly. In the Mississippi Delta. And it's a little community of Jewish people in Mississippi.
Well, what country are they from?
Have you ever heard of the United States of America?
Phil, don't be a smartass.
Well, then don't ask a stupid question. They're from America.
Well, that's not adding up.
Why doesn't... You know what? It doesn't add up to you or I because we don't know anything about this country. There's so much more to learn about America, the very country we live in, than you can shake a stick at. That's what we ought to all be doing. We ought to learn more about this place called America because it'll blow your freaking mind, the stuff that's out there and the people that live here and the things that they've done and the places they've been.
They got people in a horse and buggy like the Amish.
Well, that ain't no secret.
Man, the Amish, everybody know about them. I was just saying, they're in a buggy.
So they're in a buggy, so what?
The Amish are on TV every week, bud, with the Amish Mafia. Isn't that what it is?
I don't know what that crap is.
Well, you better watch it.
Watch what?
Is that the Amish Mafia?
Well, they're not going to come out. What do you think they're going to do? Buggy whip them to death? Buggy whip them to death.
All right, enough. Can we get back to our guests that have been on hold for very patiently here for these many minutes? Vernon Dozier and Jack Armstrong. All right, Jack, I think you had the floor. Go ahead.
Vernon, you know, look, I, in the spirit of what Ms. Gray was talking about, I want to reach out. I want to try to, bridge over the differences here. All I'm trying to say is, you know, you can say what you want about Obamacare, but this is a discussion that the American people have been wanting to have for decades. Look, you know, Vernon, you're a teacher. Health care has been a reality in this world of ours for over 100 years. This is something that America is coming too late to the game, and it's very tragic, my friend. Very tragic indeed, I think. For the American people to commence a discussion on health care, and they're commencing that discussion with misinformation, purposeful misinformation, that I think is wrong.
Well, I'd like to know what you mean by purposeful misinformation. And please don't answer, because it's a rhetorical question. I mean, we have to try to inform ourselves, the American people, the best way we know how. Now, I don't care if health care is over 100 years old. This is the United States of America. And we have always gone our own way. We've done our own thing. The rest of the world can, in the words of the poet, go to hell in a pea-green boat for all I care. I'm an American. We go our own way. And that song Margaret sings, how's that, Margaret?
You can go your own way, that one?
Yeah. That's a song that the Clintons, remember when they came into the power power vacuum that was Washington and they got elected, and you can go your own way. Well, I'm going my own way now, pal, and I'll tell you what, Bill, it ain't your way. Because the way you go and the way I go, two different ways, okay?
Well, I could say so. Well, I won't say anything.
Yeah, please don't make a joke here. What I'm trying to say is this. Ted Cruz is doing his constitutional best to get us to at least think about this destructive road that we're going down that can really ruin this country for many, many years to come. I think that...
So what do you... I have to ask a question.
I'm not done.
Well, I want to ask a question. What do you do about the trillions of dollars every year in healthcare costs? Now, you guys have not had one sensible suggestion. You come up with this tort reform, this, that. What you guys have done is you've taken the Obama package, the package you say that doesn't work, the package you say that's disastrous, the package you say, and now what you're doing to answer the healthcare question is you want to tweak the Obama ideas. The conservatives have never had one good idea on this.
That's just not right, Phil. That is not right.
No, that Phil is absolutely right. You guys had the tort reform thing. You said that a bunch of, you know, be able to buy insurance across state lines and everything. You know, and that doesn't amount to a hill of you know what.
Yes, it does. Tort reform was several billion dollars.
Several billion dollars off of trillions of dollars. See, that's what we're talking about here, Vernon. You're going to stand on ceremony. You know,
I'm not standing on ceremony. I'll tell you this. I don't want to keep debating a guy who comes on here and goes, I think that you are going, you know, there was a guy.
Yeah, this guy doesn't want to have a serious discussion.
No, but there was a guy called Jose Jimenez. Do you remember him?
No, I don't, you know, and that's too bad for you. Too bad for you.
Oh, too bad for me. Hey.
He hung up.
Who did?
Jack.
What a baby. I mean, what a complete...
All right, thank you very much. We got to get going. We are done with this hour here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We will be back next hour. A few more things to get to here on the agenda. But we do thank Vernon as well as Jackson, or Jack, I should say, because you know, he doesn't want to confuse himself with the great Jackson Armstrong. Jack, we thank you, and we thank you, Vernon, for that attempt at a debate. And I think, really, those two guys, as stupid as they are, that's about what the debate sounds like in this country on healthcare. I'm Phil Henry, and we'll be right back, 855-500-7445. Welcome back to the Phil Henry Show, world famous and like that, every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And we deconstruct and reconstruct, and we basically just try to have fun with our friends at the expense of you. I'm kidding. We try to have fun with you and our friends at the expense of them.
Woo!
All right. Some things that we have to talk about, and I don't know where to begin. Margaret, you wanted to discuss... I know that we have the Team Oracle USA America's Cup. Is this something of...
Well, you used to sail, and sailing is a very important sport. Now, I understand that you have to have money to be able to sail, but it doesn't mean that people shouldn't sail, or at least learn how to sail. And there are places where you can learn how to sail, if you want to learn...
How to sail.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. But I like sailing. I just I don't know whether it's the biggest. I think when you get to America's pride and America's place in the world and you know, us against them, then everybody's like a... It's like everybody was a chess fan, you know?
Yeah, chess, man, more people play chess than sail.
Well, yes, that could very well be true. You have to understand, I'm in a very delicate place. I sail frequently with friends of Frank, and Frank does too. We have a boat. It's not a sailboat because Frank won't have anything to do with sailing. He thinks sailing is for people that work too hard. Frank wants to sit and relax.
No, I'm with Frank. You know, I grew up with a father that sailed. I grew up on a sailboat. I didn't grow up on a sailboat, but for a good part of my youth, I was out there on a sailboat with my dad, and because he liked that. And I was born lazy, as most people, I think, have been.
Well, speak for yourself.
Okay. Do you like to sail?
I enjoy sailing, but more to the point, I'm pretty good at it. I'm better than Frank, and we have been out with the Tollivers and some of those people. And I can, when need be, lend a hand.
You know all about how to be sail?
I know enough about sailing, yes, to, as you do, Phil.
I wouldn't put my knowledge of sailing... What I learned about sailing, I couldn't put it to practice on one of these boats.
I'm not saying on one of those boats, but I'm saying as a sailor.
Yeah, I suppose. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I learned that I didn't know what my old man was talking about when he was talking about it. You know, he would say, I got to go into the wind. Okay, now you're ahead of the wind. Now that's it. Go across the wind. I don't know what the hell he's talking about, going into the wind, going ahead of the wind.
Well, ahead of the wind... What is he? Don't. Every time he starts laughing.
But just because she says ahead of the wind. What a baby, man. I swear to God.
Yeah, man. Lighten up, man. I am lightening up.
Anyway, when you run ahead of the wind, that's when you see the big balloon thing. You know the big balloon thing?
You mean the big spinnaker sail?
Oh, get you.
Well, that's what it's called. The big ballooned-out sail that everybody sees, like, on the cover of Yachting magazine. That one?
Yes, the one on the cover of Yachting magazine.
Well, that's the one that everybody would recognize. When you see the sailboat with that big, that's called a spinnaker sail, and you're running ahead of the wind. The wind's behind you. Okay. But that's easy. But, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, tucking that baby right into the wind and you know, getting maximum speed. I never could. I mean, I knew what my old man was. I knew it in practice better than what he was talking about.
Yeah, your old man didn't make no sense.
Well, that's unfortunate, but your father did die of several strokes. Wasn't he... Wasn't your father, and I say this with all due respect, Phil, wasn't he borderline imbecile?
Could you watch that, please?
Didn't you tell me that?
No, I didn't. My dad had a serious... He was incapacitated. He had dementia. Borderline imbecile.
Well, what were you talking about then?
I'm just telling you that I was a 10-year-old kid. I don't know what the hell he was talking about. I just did by example. So one of the things my father used to say is, watch those telltales. There's a little strips of fabric that were tied to the shrouds, these metal lines that held up the mast, okay? And you'd watch and see which way the wind is blowing. And I always knew that I had to have those shrouds in a certain direction. I go right into that wind, and that's what I knew how to do. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I just knew that I had to sort of have the sail look a certain way.
What?
And you're a sailor, huh?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, you're starting to get that's pretty advanced stuff.
All right, Frank Gray is on the line with us. Frank, the television producer, attorney, entertainment attorney, and he's also the husband of Margaret Gray. Frank, how you doing?
I'm better than Custer, young man.
Hey, and Frank, we're talking about sailing, and Margaret tells me you guys have a boat. You have a, what do you got, a Chris Craft?
We got a Kevin, yeah. It's a stout. It's about a 60-footer. And we take it, I've taken it down to Mexico, and we've gone over to Hawaii a couple of times on it. We've got full GPS. He's a good craft, you know.
You know, you're supposed to call a boat she.
That's what I did.
Gender confusion.
Oh, yeah.
He's a very stout craft, and you want to, and every time we bring it into harbor and bring it up to the place where the boat goes, which is where you tie the rope, you know, we give him a good bath, you know.
Where you tie you mean the line?
The line, yeah. I don't, let me just explain. I don't go in for all that nautical jargon. I don't care if it offends people. On my boat, I say it's a rope, and we're going to go downstairs. I do all the things that would piss off any sailor or nautical person, because it's too much trouble, and it pisses me off that people expect me to talk some kind of Navy talk. And I get on my boat to relax, not to start speaking some foreign language, okay?
Well, I know. I'm not saying anything to you. It's your boat. You can do whatever the hell you want, you know. Did your father have a boat? Did you...
Yeah, my dad was a fisherman. He enjoyed fishing, and of course, my dad, it was actually my mother. I called my dad, I called him my dad, but it was my mother.
Why did you call your mother your dad?
Because he taught me everything. He taught me how to pee standing up. He taught...
How does your mother teach you that?
Look, you're going to let me finish?
Let him finish, Phil.
Look, my mother was both mother and father to me, because my father, she took off, I think, before I was born. So my dad, I called my mother dad. And that's what he was to me. He was my dad. And he taught me how to pee standing up.
What, do you mind me asking?
I'm going to get to it if you don't mind. He taught me how to pee standing up using a funnel. Okay? So he,
Boy.
Well, what's that supposed to mean, boy?
You got to be kidding me, man. You had to be taught how to do that?
Yeah, I had to be taught how to do that because my father was a he. Okay? He wasn't a she, like most people's fathers are. He was a he, and so I didn't know anything about peeing standing up. I thought you had to sit down to do it. That's what I saw him doing all the time.
Let me ask you a question, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and offend me. Go ahead and try and say something about my mother. He was a wonderful woman.
I understand, and I'm not trying to offend anybody, Frank. But I do not recall having to teach me to pee standing up. I just,
Phil, if you think about it, yes. Someone had to say, no, you stand over the toilet, you don't sit down.
That's right, and that's what my mother did. And so in order to show me how, he went into the kitchen and got a funnel, and I think a piece of garden hose. And
okay, all right, I got to take a break. Very good, Frank. Thanks so much for that.
All right. Uh-huh.
When I get home, I'll tell Frank that after he got off the line with you, you were going and making all kinds of noises.
Yeah, you gotta admit, it's pretty funny. The funnel.
You gotta be kidding me. Did he tell you that story?
Yes, he loved his mother very much, and she was both father and mother to him, because his father, who did run off before Frank was born, was frightened of the prospect of Frank being born, because his father knew what he looked like. And Frank's mother was no looker either, so the father decided to get out while the getting was good, because he didn't want to see the kisser on this kid.
Uh-huh. Well, Frank's a good-looking guy.
Yes, he is. It skipped a generation. I don't know.
All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show with more. I think we can bypass the America's Cup, man. We don't need to talk about that. Here's a really fascinating story about cars that have been submerged for decades solving missing persons cases. I mean, that's just flat spooky, man, and that is what is happening in some parts of the country, where they just discovered a submerged car and the skeletal remains of two young women that they had lost for 42 years. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here and philhendryshow.com. Now, I got this story here. Mark, don't grab it from me, bud.
That's the one where they found him in a car. So what?
Yeah, they found him in a car. Don't grab it away from me. This is a story, and I don't know why missing person stories are interesting to me. I'm always hoping that they get resolved. I mean, so I guess that shows that I'm not the most, the most despicable guy in the world. It's not like I got some ghoulish fascination with, they're missing. You know, to me, it's a mystery that has to be solved, you know, but, and very often they aren't. That's why that show, I don't like that show.
Are you going to start in again about the Disappeared? That is a great show, Disappeared. Or what is it called, Disappeared?
Yeah, Disappeared, I don't like that show because they never have, most of the time, they never solve it.
Because that's life, Phil. That is life.
Well, Don Misla is going to be on the line with us here. Don is a professor of engineering. He also has his private investigator's license from the state of Washington. He's going to be on the line with us here to talk a little bit about some of these cases. And Don, that's not Don's line, is it?
No. Don? No.
Get Don, Mr. Misla on the line. Don, I wanted to talk to you about this case in South Dakota. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, Phil. Thank you.
You know these two girls?
I know the cases, I do.
You know, I was just talking to Margaret and to the guys here about the show Disappeared. You know that show on ID?
I do know it very well, yeah.
That show has always bothered me because most of the time it never does have an ending that, you know, that I would like to see, that most people would like to see, is they found the person.
No, I think that program probably adequately reflects the reality, Phil, of most families, and that is they're still looking for the individual that's missing. Most people that go missing, we find the percentage of people that stay missing is very, very low, but those are the cases that break your heart.
These two girls in South Dakota, tell me a little bit about this case.
Well, these are two young ladies that were missing for 42 years. It's an eerie echo of events early this month in Oklahoma, where they also found a couple of young people. Skeletal remains, though, were discovered on Tuesday in the car of two teenage girls who disappeared 42 years ago, a day after it was found wheels up in a South Dakota creek. Now, the two young ladies were 17 at the time of their disappearance, Cheryl Miller and Pamela Jackson. They're from Vermilion in southeast South Dakota. They disappeared on May 29, 1971. They were on their way to a party. And according to records on file for the Justice Department's National Missing and Unidentified Person System, that's the last time that anybody had any contact with them. They were in a 1960 Studebaker. It hadn't been seen until Monday when a fisherman spotted its wheels poking out of the water in Brule Creek. That's down near Elk Point. And that's about 30 miles east of Vermilion on the Iowa border.
Do you know that area?
I know it. I'm familiar with it. I've gone fishing there. And I've also looked and poked around. Hold on for a minute. Give me a little bit of lemon water and just... Sorry, Phil, I'm dealing with a cold myself. I know you had the flu.
I had a little bit of flu last week. I got the flu from a flu shot. Well, I had the flu, and then I got it made worse by a flu shot.
Would you recommend getting a flu shot?
I would, yeah.
Could I get a little bit of honey and a little bit of lemon juice, just a little tiny bit of water? Yeah, that's too much. I've been fishing in that area, Phil, and so I know the area very well. The car was in bad shape. It had been buried in the mud at the bottom of a creek for 42 years, and the crews had a difficult time pulling it out until Tuesday when they made the discovery. According to the Attorney General of the state of South Dakota, Marty Jackley, he told a local television station the car was spotted thanks to a recent drought in the region, which dropped the creek's level low enough for it to emerge after four decades. He cannot determine yet whether foul play was involved. See, this is the part that bothers me. With all of our modern forensics, and you got a car that's upside down in a creek, you're telling me there isn't foul play? Excuse me, hold on, Phil. I want a little tiny bit of of lemon juice, and I want a little tiny bit of water, okay? You're trying to tell me that there isn't foul play? I think there is foul play.
Well, what about the possibility that the car was...
What is that?
It's my phone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's very distracting.
I apologize. I've got a phone that's ringing, and I'm on the air. What about the fact that the car might have been an accident, and it flipped upside down and landed in the mud and just went underwater?
Well, that is possible. I mean, you're talking about a part of the country where that is not, it's not a lot of people there. It obviously is a populated area, but it's very possible that, but I just think, what's the likelihood that you're going to go upside down into a creek and just, that's it, that's the end? I can't, when I look at my own life, I look at the life of Don Misla, and I think, are you trying to tell me that's how I'm going to go out? I go upside down in a creek, and that's the end? There's not a peep, there's not a mouse fart, excuse my
talking to?
What's that?
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to one of my student assistants here. I got to get a little bit of lemon juice.
Because you've been asking this person for lemon juice, and
I'm asking for my cough. I need just a tiny bit. What the problem is, Phil, they're bringing me too much. I don't need. I just want a little tiny bit of lemon juice, water, apple juice. Did I say apple juice? I didn't say it. All right. I need apple juice, water, lemon juice, and honey. All four in equal parts. All right. I apologize, Phil. They can't determine. Cheryl and Pamela, they were juniors at Vermilion High School. They were last seen on their way to a party at a gravel pit just a mile, half mile. Well, imagine, the kicks come hard in that part of the world. Going to a party at a gravel pit. That's great.
All right, we don't need that kind of commentary. You know, the thing that...
Well, I'm sorry, but I think that if they had more for these kids to do, they wouldn't be on their way to a party at a gravel pit.
Yeah, and they would have flipped it upside down.
Well, what do you want them to do, man? Do you want to have a few more places for kids to go to in these remote areas so they don't flip their car upside down and land in a creek because they're on their way to a gravel pit to get their kicks? I mean, it's a remote part of... It's not remote, but it's a lightly populated part of the country. It's South Dakota. What the hell?
I'm saying, I mean, if you care about your kids...
What does that mean, man? You know, I have to tell you, this is a period of time when I was... Myself, I was 18 years old, so I was the same age as these girls. And we were partying in those days. 71, I was 18. I was a freshman at Pasadena City College. And you went, and you used to drive up in the city here where I grew up. We would drive up and down streets until we saw a whole bunch of cars, and we realized there's a party, and we'd get out, and we'd go in.
So what you did is you just crashed the parties.
I didn't know. That's what you did?
That's what we did, yeah. We just looked for parties. You would drive around looking for parties, and as soon as you saw a bunch of cars, you'd stop, you'd get out, and go in. These kids, living where they lived, they obviously that wasn't an option, so they had to, plan their parties.
Yeah, and so they planned them in a gravel pit. All I'm telling you is there's got to be a better idea. I mean, if they had an idea man down there or something like that.
All right, well, I don't think that that's worthy of our discussion right now.
All right, well, in any event, hold on for a minute, Phil. I need a little, just a dab, not even, it wouldn't even wet the hair of a mouse.
Could you just not keep doing that? Because it's driving me nuts.
Yeah, it's a little distracting.
What is?
You keep asking for this lemon juice.
Now, hold on. I'm asking for a little tiny bit. Test it out. We have laboratory mice here, Phil. Test it out on a mouse. I'm asking for some hair gel. It's got nothing to do with my cold. And
what do you mean, test it out on a mouse?
I'm saying take a little tiny bit of hair gel. I'm talking to a guy on the radio. He doesn't get it. And comb it into the mouse's head just to see how it looks. Okay, Phil. Now,
see, you're doing whatever you're doing. You're doing your business, your lab work. I thought you were an engineer.
I am, but I'm also here in this lab. They had mice, and I developed a hair gel on the side. Is that bad, or...?
Well, it's very unusual. You're an engineer with a PI license, and you also developed a hair gel. You're coughing... It's distracting me, Don, and I can put up with just about anything.
All right, well...
I mean, what do you mean, comb it into the mouse's hair? Are you...
I'm just saying, we're testing out the hair gel.
Okay, hold on. I want to get to this story, and I want to talk about it serious, and I don't give a damn about whether he has hair gel to test out or whether there's a mouse available. Comb it into the mouse's hair. Phil Hendry's show here as we talk with Don Mixa from University of Washington on these missing girls and the forensics, the forensic science that we have available to us now, and how more than ever before we are discovering missing people, the remains of missing people, identifying the remains of missing people. And then there's also the story of these bog bodies. You know, they're finding people that are like 5,000 years old.
What are their names?
They don't have a database on their names, man, but we'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. Man.
Name of the bog man.
No, his name is... Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And on the line with me is Don Mixa, unless Don is just having a hard time tonight.
Well, he's having a hard time with his flu, and he just asked for a little...
Yeah, a little tiny bit of the honey.
He keeps asking for a little tiny bit of this and a little tiny bit of that, okay?
Yeah, well, maybe his girlfriend's used to asking for that.
Okay, Margaret, you know, let me do the jokes.
Oh, us?
Let me... Don Mixa with us from the University of Washington as we continue discussing with him the forensic science involved in identifying people who've been missing for so long. These girls that went missing in 1971 and have just now been found, do we know if there are any relatives still alive?
That is a very good question, Phil, and my cursory view of this, the girls, just to finish the story, they were last seen, they were on their way to a party. They were following a car full of boys who they stopped to ask for directions to the party. The boys told investigators that when they looked back in their rearview mirror, the girls had vanished. It's very possible, Phil, that we're talking about an accident, just as you said. I'm simply saying to you that I would like to think that Don Mixa is not just going to flip a car upside down and that's the end of that. You know?
I understand, and I don't think I'd like to hear about Phil Henry doing that. But, you know, I mean, sometimes life is that cruel. You're alive, you're full of vim and vigor, you're looking forward to a lifetime of enjoyment and plans and dreams, and the next thing you know, you're upside down in a creek and you're dead.
Well, I mean, the way you put it,
Yeah, I know, but that's life. And these poor kids, in 2004, clothing, bones, a purse, and other items were found on a farm belonging to David Lycan, a convicted serial rapist, who was subsequently indicted on 6 charges of murder in the girl's disappearance. But those charges were dropped 4 years later.
Yeah, that is an example of the Innocence Project. I'm not saying the Innocence Project, but that's an example, I think, Phil, where the Innocence Project was not needed, where the prosecutors involved in the case, they learned that another inmate had made up his claim that this guy had confessed. The informer was convicted of perjury, and this guy, Lycan, remains in prison on the unrelated rape convictions.
So this guy, they were about to burn down for the murder of these girls. That was 2004, and it turns out that it was phony baloney.
Yeah, the jailhouse informant was just that, just a dirty little... You know, let's face it, the jail is full of these dirty little cheap, greasy... I mean, I got to tell you, I was, in my younger days, I got another 6 months in jail for assault. It had nothing to do with sexual assault, but a dirty, cheap, little, greasy jailhouse informer decided to eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and he picked out me, Don Mixa. He says, I think I'll rat this guy as a guy that was, you know, assaulted... you know, another inmate, and it was not sexual, but they tried to make it sound that way.
Well, did you assault the guy?
I didn't assault him, no. I thought it was consensual.
And it's not sexual?
It was not a sexual assault. It was consensual.
In jail?
Yes, in jail. Yeah.
Phil, I mean, you know, it's embarrassing for Don.
Well, you brought it up.
Yeah, I know I brought it up as an example of a dirty, greasy little punk.
All right, I'm sorry.
You know, let's just move past it, all right?
But it was sexual.
Oh, man. Yes, it was sex.
All right, I mean, look, pal, you know, if you don't want these things talked about, don't bring them up.
In any event... the charges were done now. After state troopers found 2 similarly mud-caked cars buried in a lake in Oklahoma earlier this month, it took them almost a week to discover that they contained what are presumed to be the bodies of 6 people. Now, that's Oklahoma. And look at the difference between cops in Oklahoma and cops in South Dakota. The cops in Oklahoma can't figure out, what is that? Is that a body? It takes them a week to figure out there's 6 people jammed into this car. Are you ready for that? Now, the last time I heard that happen was, and as God is my witness, Phil, was a drive-in movie theater that my sister worked at. And she let in, I don't know how many cars. People were hidden in the trunk. There were people hanging underneath the car. You know how people used to sneak into drive-in theaters?
Yeah. I mean, people, that was a common occurrence back in the days of drive-in theaters.
Yeah, well, my sister worked at one. And she let in one night about a half a dozen cars with probably a total of 50 people got in for free. And when they asked her later, she said, "I didn't know what it." She said, "What are you talking about? I couldn't tell what was in that car." I said, "A car came in. It had to be driven by somebody, but I couldn't make out head or tail what was in it. I don't know whether there was a human driving it, whether that was a rabbit."
Well, what is that? I don't understand. What does that mean?
Is there too many people can't make it out?
Just what I said. She couldn't make out how many people. There were feet, eyeballs, you know.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, wait, let's back up. You think I'm nuts?
I think you're, you know, if you're telling me your sister let six cars in with a total of 50 people, and she couldn't tell who's driving the car.
Well, she knew a person was driving the car. But the Oklahoma authorities, Phil, said that they found six bodies. Eventually, they figured out there were six bodies. Well, it's the same with my sister. Eventually, she figured out 50 people got in for free, but she couldn't figure that out. All she saw was car after car after car with people, but 50?
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. So that's what they... And one of the cars found in Oklahoma was being used by three high school students who vanished in November of 1970, just 6 months before Pamela and Cheryl disappeared.
Was there any connection between the two?
No, there's no connection between the two. No, there wouldn't be. I mean, one's in South Dakota and the other's in Oklahoma.
Yeah, but it's about the same time.
Yeah.
No, it isn't about the same time. November of 1970 and May of 1971, it's totally different. Two different states, two different genders, two different cars.
Just kids that go missing. All right, Don, thank you very much.
I just want to make one thing clear. My sister is a wonderful person, and she's now retired. She was a nurse for some 40 years, and her and her husband are retired, and they live up at Owens Lake. But I wanted to say that she is not mental. She's working at this drive-in. Cars are coming in. They fired her because 50 people got in for free, and they all had fireworks, and that apparently was not a very good night for her. But she didn't know. They were hanging underneath the car. They were stuffed in the trunk. They had one guy who risked very serious injury. He laid across the engine block, and they were able to get the hood down over top of him.
Just to see a movie?
Yeah, I mean, you know how it was.
Well, yeah, I know how it was, but I mean, to lay across an engine block, I mean, how good, what movie was it?
I don't know what movie it was, Phil. It might have been, you know, The Exorcist or one of those. It might have been nothing, you know. It might have been the Martian from, you know.
Martian from Outer Space.
Well, it's not going to be called The Martian from Outer Space because obviously that's where a Martian's from.
Well, whatever the movie, well, I'm just trying to say that obviously it was a very, very popular night for a guy to lay across an engine block.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they did everything. They stuffed... there were two guys who were hanging from the oil pan underneath the car. There were about four people in the trunk. Then they had two people in the back seat, two people in the front seat. But in the back seat, laying low, were four more people.
Four?
Yeah. And then in the front seat, they had one, two, I think three. So they, and there were two girls in the front seat, but they had three guys up there hiding. And the problem, you know, one of them had his head under, you know, and please don't, but he had his head stuck under this girl's dress. So he got into all kinds of hell on earth. I mean, they almost lynched him.
I don't know. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Seattle, Washington.
Okay, I...
What do you think of some hayseed country up here, Phil?
No, I don't think it's hayseed, but I you know, for them to almost, thank God your sister grew up and wasn't too damaged by that experience. It sounds weird. Don, thanks very much for an update on this. We'll be talking to you later.
Well, that is,
You know what? Who knows if any of that's true? So they found these girls. They don't know if it was foul play. I'm willing to bet, if you take a look at this picture, and I'll hold it up with the camera here on Phil TV, you see the wheels coming up out of the mud there?
Yes, it looks like it flipped upside down.
It does. So I'll be willing to bet, if these kids are looking in the rearview mirror and they don't see the car went off the road. The car, the girls lost control of the car, went off the road. It happens. It sounds too pat and too easy, and that's exactly the reason why a lot of people don't believe things like that happen. But they do happen that way. The car went off the road. It flipped. It went into the mud. These poor girls are pinned inside this thing. I mean, you're upside down in water. Jack, you haven't got a prayer.
Yeah, it could have swum out.
You don't even, what do you mean swim out? You don't, you're completely disoriented, man. You're upside down. There's water filling the car. What you think is up is down. What you think is down is up. You know, you're trying to roll a window down. It isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen. All right, we'll be back. Our final segment here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget to get a backstage pass at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. A backstage pass gives you access to thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio, thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of video casts, of character clips, all kind of thing, man. It's the largest repository of any single radio show in the history of man on this planet. Prove me wrong. All right, we'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. What?
Dropped off the channel photos.
I just had the same conversation with our dear close personal friend CJ. You gotta, if I don't give a damn, if you can't afford your tags, you look at it, costs hundreds of dollars to get your tags redone or whatever, you know, renewed, wherever.
What are you talking about?
Talking about something you don't worry about, which is getting your tags renewed.
You're talking about the car?
Yeah.
No, I don't do that. I send Amparo one of our assistants.
Well, isn't that nice, Margaret? A lot of us don't have that, you know.
Well, I'm not trying to lord it over you. You're the one that brought it up.
I'm talking to Robert about getting his tags renewed, and he says he can't afford it. What do you mean you can't afford it? It costs hundreds of dollars no matter where you live.
State of California, man, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, it could have cost that much someplace else.
No. Yeah, it is. What about if I move to Rhode Island?
Rhode Island? What do you want to move to Rhode Island for?
The tags would be more affordable.
Oh, are you nuts or something, man? Rhode Island's going to charge you hundreds of dollars. They're in a state in the union that doesn't charge you hundreds of dollars to get your car tags renewed. Get your freaking tags renewed, man. You know, I'm the same. I was in the same boat for a long time until I finally got responsible, which means I got married.
Yeah, that's who took care of it for you.
Well, no, I was responsible before that. But I remember I was driving around with expired tags on my car for a long... Here in California, I was driving around with expired tags for at least a year, maybe a year and a half, until finally I got nailed by the CHP one morning. And I figured I had beaten the odds pretty consistently for a long time. I was due. And I got pulled over, and here in California, you get a ticket, and you better... Now, if you've got a suspended driver's license, you get arrested. And that's, I think, the way it is everywhere. But the expired tag thing is different in different states. Some states, they impound your car. In other states, they will just simply give you the ticket.
What do you mean they impound your car? They take your car from you.
Yeah. If you don't have a properly registered car, they take it away from you. And it's not unlike not having a valid driver's license. You will be arrested. You will be arrested. Without a valid driver's license, or at least with a suspended driver's license. So it's just find the freaking money. If you can't afford to drive a car, you can't afford to drive. Is that what you're saying, Robert?
I can afford to drive a car. I just didn't want to have to spend the money.
Yeah, you got to have to spend it.
I know that now, numbnut.
Hey, can he call me numbnut on the radio?
I think he just did. All right, Amanda Bynes, speaking of mental health, Amanda Bynes' drunk driving case has been moved to a mental health court. Boy, that's too bad, man. The drunk driving case against troubled actress and former teenage star Amanda Bynes has been moved to the mental health court at the request of her attorney. Attorney Richard Hutton argued the 27-year-old former Nickelodeon star was unable to stand trial in the case due to doubts about her mental competence. Bynes has been under court-ordered psychiatric care after she allegedly... started a small fire in front of a home in the L.A. suburb of Thousand Oaks in July. Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Edward Morton referred the case to the court's mental health division, where a judge will decide if Bynes is fit for trial. Her drunk driving case stems from an April 2012 incident in which she was charged with driving under the influence in West Hollywood. Police said Bynes struck a sheriff's patrol car and refused to take a sobriety test. That's not good, man. When you hit a cop car, you,
You better do what they say.
You hit a cop car and you're drunk. That's about as big a screw-up in the history of screw-ups as there is. And then she refuses to take this. Only a chick. Excuse me for saying this, folks. I'm sorry. I shouldn't. But it's true. It's true. I see women do this And then they pull that, I won't take that. I think it's because some chicks who are really, you know, good-looking, they think they can sweet-talk a cop.
No, I know what you mean. I used to do it as a young girl, too. I never forget, I lost control of my father's car. He had a station wagon. He had one of those big Ford LTD station wagons. You remember those?
Yeah.
I lost control of this. It got airborne.
Good God, Margaret.
No, I'm not kidding. This was in downtown Harrisburg. It was near the state capitol. It was raining, and I was with some girlfriends, and we were having just a crazy time. We were out for our midterms. I think it was spring vacation. I lost control of the car, and we did a windmill across two intersections. Okay? We slammed into a state patrol car that was right in front of the Capitol building, setting both of our cars on fire.
Oh, come on.
No. Now, we got out okay. I crawled out of the window. Both of my girlfriends, they got out, just opened the door. I had to crawl out through the windshield.
Was there anybody in the state patrol car?
No, there was no one in that car. But the fires went out right away. I don't know what started the fires. But the fires went out right away. There was an engine fire, and there looked to me as if there was a fire underneath the patrol car. Well, it turns out that the state patrolman was asleep in the trunk of his own car taking a nap.
Get out of here!
All right, I'm throwing the flag on that.
Are you telling me I'm a liar?
What do you mean he was asleep in the trunk of his own car? This guy was taking a nap in the trunk of his own car.
Phil, I get a little tired of being called a liar by you. All right?
You know what? You're right. I should know. You've had a very weird life.
Well, don't say it as if it's an indictment.
Well, okay. Let me just recap. You're with your girlfriends. You're partying. It's spring vacation.
Yes, we're not drunk or anything, but we're playing grab ass or whatever.
What do you mean, grab ass?
We're screwing around in the car. We're 16 years old.
All right.
So I'm grabbing her ass, you know.
No, I don't know. Now this is getting even weirder.
Oh, look at the eyes light up on you guys when it sounds lesbian. Well, now I'm not going to tell you.
What? I mean, what in the hell kind of a story is this, man? We're playing grab ass. I'm grabbing her. Three. I can figure guys doing that.
Oh, really?
So anyway, you're.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to go through it.
Okay. Well, I can remember what you said.
Yeah.
You were doing a kind of a helicopter through two intersections. So the street is that wet that the car is sliding and spinning. It's pinwheeling across two intersections.
Yes.
You slam into a state patrol car in front of the Capitol building in Pennsylvania, and both of the cars ignite on fire and then very quickly go out.
Yes.
What do you think that was?
Well, it must have been the rain that put them out.
Well, a gasoline fire or an oil fire, that doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense.
It might have been some brief electrical charge. I don't know.
Well, did anybody ever tell you?
My father took care of it. Okay, Phil, I don't know.
Boy, that would be a really interesting thing to find out eventually. You know, your father took care of it. I mean, it sounds like there might have been some liability that Daddy just bought off.
How dare you? Even if that were true, for you to articulate that gives me more pain in that area.
She's pointing at her butt.
Well, if you didn't...
Hey, watch it.
I'm pointing that out.
You're the one that said you were having pains in your ass.
Yes.
So the fire goes out, and then they open up the trunk of the state patrol car, and the cop is in there taking a nap.
Yes, the cops are there taking a nap. Yes, yes.
Well.
You don't believe it.
I believe it. I just think it's... I'm so tired of hearing these weird-ass stories. It's enough to make a man want to cry. I'm telling you. It's just so freaking weird, man. You know.
Well, Phil, it's my life, not yours.
Pinwheeling through traffic, playing grab-ass.
That's right, and there was a cop asleep in the trunk of the car. All of it true, all of it drawn from my life. And yes, my father took care of it with money.
Yeah. Well, there you go, folks. The story of jurisprudence and growing up young in America. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Don't forget to join us online at philhenryshow.com. After the show, we'll have a show log posted. We'll also have another classic podcast ready to go for you. And we'll see you all tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Pacific, on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 10 o'clock Eastern Time. And again, many, many thanks to all of our new affiliates, our listeners, all of our advertisers. And tomorrow night, we will do a rundown of our new stations, huh?
I think that'd be nice.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.